So what does childhood trauma look like in a grown-up when that trauma is left untreated and ignored? I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry today on The Larry Miller Show. And the Rainbow Project has been providing mental health care to children for 45 years. And over that time, we have learned a lot about how to best help children heal. So joining us now is Cheryl Cato, Executive Director of the Rainbow Project, a child and family therapist and a clinical adjunct professor in the UW School of Medicine and Public Health in the Department of Psychiatry. And Cheryl, welcome to The Larry Miller Show.
Thank you so much, and good afternoon. It is past noon, so good afternoon.
Indeed it is. Also joining us today, Dr. Tanner Bommersbach, a child psychiatrist in the UW School of Medicine and Public Health in the Department of Psychiatry. And Dr. Bommersbach, welcome to you.
Thank you so much. I'm really happy to be here.
And if you are listening and have questions about treating children's mental health or finding access to health care, mental health care for children, or treating trauma, join us. If you've got a story, let us know. 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email us, talk@WPR.org. And Cheryl Cato, I will begin with you. Tell us a little bit about the Rainbow Project.
Yes, well, we are proud of, with 45 years of having worked with nearly 30,000 children and families. And we describe ourselves as a child and family counseling and community resource, really working with young children all the way up through high school and their families. And I think that is the unique part of what we do. We're working with trauma, meaning, of course, child abuse, neglect, domestic violence, child sexual abuse, community violence, but also natural disasters, serious accidents, sometimes to grief and loss. And so it really is a varied, but I think the unique part of what we do is that we're working with children, but also their caregivers and also the family members. And we think that that really is much more comprehensive and seeing progress sooner. We also have 10 programs. So we're working very specifically in agile enough, I think, to individualize the service treatment plans for each family. And so it is sometimes impacting not just the child, but also sometimes the second or third generation in terms of cycles.
How long have you been with the Rainbow Project, Cheryl?
Well, for 45 years,
okay.
But I tell people that I was gifted and started the program at 9 years old. if you did have to ask that, no, I think we're very proud of the work that we've done, because after, in 45 years, we were doing many, many things that now science and research have really validated as best practice and evidence-based. And so we are really proud of the progress. And that is one reason why we are devoted after all this time, because we see the successes.
Yeah, indeed. With over 30,000 children and families served in 45 years. Dr. Tanner Bommersbach also joining us, child psychiatrist in the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Dr. Bommersbach, how have the needs for mental health services changed over the last several decades, over the last half century? What have we learned about doing right for our kids?
Yeah, it's a great question. Over the last couple decades, we've really seen a rise in mental health problems and symptoms that children are experiencing and reporting. Some have said that we're in the midst of kind of a child mental health crisis right now. So children are unfortunately reporting higher rates of anxiety, higher rates of depression, higher rates of suicidal symptoms than they were one or two decades ago. It's unclear if that is due to that children are experiencing more of these symptoms, or if they just feel more comfortable reporting these symptoms now and talking to others about these symptoms now. So we don't know yet, but we do know that that there are evidence-based treatments out there, that our talk therapies and some of our medications do work really well and can help kids and families when they're in need. And I would just second what Cheryl said. Part of my role is working with the staff and kids and families at the Rainbow Project, and they're just doing such fantastic work. It's such a we're really lucky to have this agency in Madison doing the work that they're doing.
And doctor, what does untreated childhood trauma look like in a grown adult? If left untreated, what do we see as a result?
Yeah. So the first thing I'd say is that a childhood trauma is common. Mm. So about 2/3 of people by the age of 18 will have experienced at least one adverse childhood experience, which is another name for a traumatic experience. So this may be physical abuse, emotional abuse, sexual abuse, neglect, or being exposed to other forms of trauma. And so 2/3 of adults will have experienced one of these events by the age of 18. A person's response, how they respond to it, and the long-term problems that may or may not develop from that trauma really depend on a number of different factors. The most important of which is that a child has a trusting, a safe, a supportive adult that they can turn to after something like that happens. And the studies show that that is the number one factor that impacts and protects children from developing more long-term problems. We also know that kids are incredibly resilient. And so the majority of children who are exposed to an adverse childhood experience or a traumatic experience will not go on to develop long-term problems.
Okay.
But having a safe and trusted adult or other guardian figure there is a really important factor.
And let's go to your calls and questions next at 1-800-642-1234 for our guest, Cheryl Cato, Executive Director of the Rainbow Project, and Dr. Tanner Bommersbach, who works with the Rainbow Project and is a child psychiatrist in the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Jay and Eau Claire, we'll talk to you next. Good afternoon.
Yeah, I experienced a lot of physical and psychological abuse from my father growing up, and subsequently discovered the book, The Body Keeps the Score.
Yeah.
And they recommend yoga and MDMA therapy, and those have been absolutely life-changing for me.
The Body Keeps the Score is a book I have heard of. Jay and Cheryl, what do you know about this?
Well, yes, that's... Bessel van der Kolk, and he is the one who has talked about that. I think that's why it is very unique that it definitely talk therapy, but there is also an isolation in terms of freezing socially and emotionally, but also sometimes in other areas of development when we're seeing that. And so really a part of the recovery is to really be able to help them move on in those areas of development in terms of touch, body image, and being able to be present, because there are times when it is very difficult to be present. I think it's a term we use commonly, trauma, but really what it is experiencing something that is really very isolating, even if you're in a crowded room and you lose kind of that worldview and sense of self in the world. So those kinds of grounding that the caller has talked about, those activities are essentially very critical, and we use those sometimes due to create a safe base first before being able to explore some of the trauma experience, because you can't change it, but you really want them to be able to talk about it and be able to recover from it, because they can then move on.
Yeah.
But when we are in adrenaline, we sometimes are not in a dangerous situation, but will sometimes be triggered by that. So I think that's why it's so important to still be in touch with their mind and body.
Cheryl, I'm listening to you talk and listening to the work of the Rainbow Project, and I'm wondering what it's the initial assessment process with a child is like, a child who may have experienced some trauma, and you need to find out what you need to know in order to help starting the process of healing. What's the assessment process like, Cheryl?
Well, I think we're looking at the total areas of development, and everybody is so different. And there may be impacts on speech and language development. It could be on cognitive development. It is sometimes it's fear, sometimes it is really, it's very individual for each. And so we also look at the family dynamics in terms of the ability for caregivers to be able to help with that, and what Tanner was talking about in terms of trust, that ability to trust themselves as well as others, that's so fundamental. That attachment, that healthy attachment, is a very important protective factor and a resiliency that we really try to build on early on.
Yeah, and Dr. Bommersbach, you mentioned the need for a trusted and safe adult for a child. But Cheryl Cato also talks about the isolating effects that childhood trauma can create. And as you go through your work and as a child psychiatrist, Dr. Bommersbach, how do you see that connection between the isolation that trauma can create and the need for a trusted and safe adult?
Yeah, it's a good question. And kids can respond and react to trauma in a lot of different ways. Some may kind of pull back and withdraw and isolate, as Cheryl mentioned. Some may respond in other ways and may exhibit more behavioral problems. They may externalize those problems. They may exhibit more dysregulated behaviors and sometimes aggressive behaviors. And so the range of different behavioral symptoms and mental health symptoms that children may exhibit can really vary quite a bit. What I would say is that when a child comes to an adult and does talk to them about what they've experienced, disclose to them about what they've experienced, it's incredible that reaction from the adult is very, very important. And it's important to validate whatever feelings they're having in that moment about what they have experienced. And so I think Cheryl mentioned earlier a little bit how to define trauma, but it's really less about what happened to the child, and it's more about what they've experienced and what meaning they're making of that experience.
All feelings are valid, but not all feelings are final. Dr. Tanner Bommersbach, our guest, child psychiatrist in the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. He works with the Rainbow Project, Madison-based, and Cheryl Cato also joining us, executive director of the Rainbow Project, and a clinical adjunct professor in the UW School of Medicine and Public Health in the Department of Psychiatry. We have some questions for our guests, and maybe you have them as well. It's time to join the show at 1-800-642-1234. Treating childhood trauma and gaining access to health care for children. 1-800-642-1234. What do you want to know? You can also email us talk@wpr.org. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry Mueller today, and you're listening to The Larry Mueller Show. Keep getting hung up on that two-thirds that Dr. Bommersbach was talking about. Two-thirds of children have faced some form of trauma in their development, and what does that mean when it comes to mental health treatment for our kids? Good afternoon. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry Mueller today. Larry will be back tomorrow, and our guest is the executive director of the Rainbow Project, Cheryl Cato, and Dr. Tanner Bommersbach, child psychiatrist who works with the Rainbow Project and is in the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. And let's go back to your calls now at 1-800-642-1234. Email also available, talk@wpr.org. Paul in Milwaukee, good afternoon.
Yes, two of my children were sexually abused at a young age. And we didn't know about this until years and years later, when they were adults. And they definitely had problems throughout their years. One's 33 and one is 29. And it's as if they don't want to even talk about this or think it's a problem. It's like, you know, done and over with, and that's it. But I'm almost sure that it's caused some type of damage in their lives. And I just was wondering, how do I approach them when they're really pretty resistant to this topic? I don't want to trigger anything either in bringing this up.
Yeah, I'm so glad you called, Paul, and I'm so sorry to hear your story, but maybe there is some help on the way. Dr. Bommersbach, what do you suggest?
Yeah, these are really tough topics and really heartbreaking stories to hear. It's hard to give any sort of kind of advice on how to proceed. I would say I do think it's we always talk about kind of going at the child's pace and kind of not forcing children to talk about anything, but kind of following their lead in these situations when we're working with them after they've experienced something traumatic. And so that's what kind of comes to my mind first. I don't know if Cheryl has anything to add to that.
Yeah, these are, you know, folks in their 30s now, but still untreated childhood trauma and maybe some lasting effects from that. Cheryl, what would you suggest for Paul?
Well, I do agree with Dr. Tanner that I think it really is, certainly there are differences with children versus adults in some way, but the initiative really, you want it to come from them.
Okay.
And it is a matter of how you are supporting. You can't really force children, but you can be able to create as many different kinds of environments that will help them be much more informed and comfortable with themselves. And you kind of start with that in terms of how much they're informed as adults is different. But I think it really does, as adults, need to come from them. But with support, they would be able to share some of those things with others, and that could be a start. And I think sometimes even suggesting books or other kinds of authors might be helpful. But I do think that it is something that they would need to initiate.
Dr. Bommersbach, you talked about the one thing that a child needs, a determinant would be a trusted, safe adult. And it sounds like it's times for adults, the one thing that they would need that would be the determinant would be a trusted, safe adult.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's probably where children and adults are similar, is having someone there that validates their feelings, is a listener to them and will listen to them about what they've experienced and then help to kind of create more safety in their lives and more stability in their lives.
Paul, thank you so much for calling. We'll go to Brian in Waterloo next. Brian, good afternoon.
Hello. Thank you for having this discussion. It's been pretty great to listen to. I agree. Sometimes it's hard to talk about it.
Yeah.
So my dad has trauma from his childhood from my grandfather, who's also probably had trauma from his childhood, instilled it in me. And I worry a little bit about, well, I'm wondering about having that trauma manifest as like things like ADHD, and sort of like getting overwhelmed at some point, and then the circuit skips, and then we just sort of move into that different mentality. Because if so many people are developing trauma, and is there a parallel for developing ADHD in that? And is there any science in that, or is that just me trying to dissuade myself from those feelings?
Let's go to the doctor for the answer, Dr. Bommersbach.
Yeah, well, it's hard to say specifically. We do know that, you know, children's brains are developing until the age of 25. And so some cases, traumatic experiences can certainly disrupt some of the pathways and the brain circuitry that impact things like our ability to regulate our mood and our emotions. They can also impact our brain pathways that govern attention and memory. And so in that way, we do know that kids who have been exposed to traumatic experiences can be at greater risk of things like ADHD in the future,
uh-huh,
and other physical and mental health disorders. One thing I would just highlight is, you know, we mentioned adverse childhood experiences earlier, but there was a landmark study that folks may have heard of that was done in the 1990s of children on adverse childhood experiences. And they showed that not only were children who had experienced traumatic events and adverse childhood experiences more at risk of mental health disorders, but also physical health disorders, things like cancer and diabetes and high blood pressure. And so the impact of trauma at an early age can really impact many of our body's systems.
Brian had also alluded to generational trauma and how that can be passed down from family members. And Cheryl, are there tools to help stop generational trauma, the likes of which Brian alluded to?
Well, I think one of the ways that we are doing that is by working with multiple generations from families to just be able to do that together and learn together. Because I think the term, again, is used so frequently, we don't understand that sometimes it is the ability to even succeed in school, maintain employment, maintain housing, relationships. There's addiction and also involvement with crime. It impacts our worldview. But I think in terms of school performance, we need to look to a temperament versus social influence with families, and is ADHD one of those, and sorting that out versus is it something else. So those are some of the things that we look at in order to help families generationally break that cycle. And there is also research, I think, at the University of Minnesota on the cultural history of trauma. So you do have generational in families, but then you look socially at some of the areas that, may have an impact that sometimes influence generations that are not direct, whether it is from slavery, from internment for Japanese Americans, for certainly the Jewish population. They are looking at what is the impact of some of those generational traumas as well. So I'm glad that that was brought up.
Briefly here, I want to mention an email from Tracy in Milton, who recommends the book Loving Someone Who Has Sexual Trauma by Megan Laura Negendyke. That is loving. And so you're familiar with that as well, Cheryl?
Yes, yes.
Briefly here, Dr. Bommersbach, with the time we have left, how wide is the discrepancy between need for children's health care and the access to children's mental health care?
Yeah, there's a large treatment gap. There's a lot of need right now. I think the data right now is saying something less than half of kids who are in need of some sort of mental health treatment are actually receiving it.
And Cheryl,
which is just
I'm sorry we're short on time here, but I want to make sure this is a problem and we have potential for people to participate in a solution. Cheryl, you've got an event coming up Friday, September 19th on behalf of the Rainbow Project. Invite us out.
Yes, thank you. I hope everyone does. We really will have a need more than ever to make sure that this is a way we come together to really celebrate success of the families that we're working with, but also to be able to have the funding so that we can address the waiting list that we have. So I appreciate it's at Monona Terrace. It is on our website, www.therainbowproject.net. And I hope that everyone comes out. It is a worldwide event. We're having dance, celebrity dance challenges. We have the we have the actual winners worldwide of different Latin dances. We have a live band, and we hope folks will come out.
The world's best Latin dancers and me? Are you kidding me? I wouldn't miss it.
You can watch.
Cheryl said I could watch. And that's coming up Friday, September 19th at the Monona Terrace in Madison. And again, what's the best way to get tickets, Cheryl?
I think going on our website, www.therainbowproject.net.
So grateful for the work of both of you. I'm so grateful that you shared it with us today. Cheryl Cato is Executive Director of the Rainbow Project based in Madison. And Dr. Tanner Bommersbach, child psychiatrist who also works with the Rainbow Project, also works in the UW School of Medicine and Public Health in the Department of Psychiatry. Want to thank our full team for making the show possible every day. Our executive producer, Jill Nadeau, and Joel Patenaud, and Clara Neipert, birthday boy Jeff Robbins. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry Mueller today. Larry returns tomorrow right here on The Larry Mueller Show.